On Radio Jackie today, I'm joined by the leader of the Liberal Democrats and the MP for Kingston and Surbiton, Sir Ed Davey. Well, thank you for joining me this morning once again. Starting off with Gaza and foreign policy, over 200 Kingston residents have signed a petition asking you to oppose the situation in Gaza. How are you representing their concerns in Parliament? What's the latest with that?
Well, I share their concerns about what's been happening in Gaza, and I'm going to meet them. I've been raising it at Prime Minister's Questions, pushing the government to do more. We've got to remember that we should be condemning completely Hamas and the way they murdered so many innocent civilians and triggered this appalling situation. But the way that the Netanyahu government have behaved is shocking. There's no doubt they've breached international law. And we've been calling on the UK government, as it presses for the release of the hostages by Hamas, to put much greater pressure on the Netanyahu government through sanctions on individual ministers, on people like these extreme right-wing settler ministers like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. And I've even called for sanctions on Prime Minister Netanyahu himself. So we've got to get tougher. And we've also got to push President Trump to do far more. He has it within his power to solve this more than anyone else, and he's failed.
Do you believe the UK government is doing enough to push for an immediate ceasefire and humanitarian aid access in Gaza?
I think it could do more. It's doing better than the former Conservative government, to be fair. But I do think it needs to go beyond what it said. So, for example, it has called for the recognition of the Palestinian state, which is right, but it's put many conditions behind that. I think we should proceed immediately to recognise Palestinian state. If we're going to get a peaceful solution, we do need a two-state solution which recognises both Israel and its right to exist and prosper, but with also a state for the Palestinians. And what is so worrying about what the Netanyahu government is doing, it's almost as if they're trying to stop that two-state solution being a possibility with what it's doing, not just in Gaza, but on the West Bank, by saying there can be more settlements built on the West Bank, which, let's remember, is occupied territory, which would be the Palestinian state. So that's why we have to get tougher on Netanyahu. He is a barrier to peace.
Some local campaigners are saying that the Lib Dems' response hasn't gone far enough. What do you say to them?
It's interesting because when I speak to Palestinians, they say, mostly tell me we're the only party really speaking up. And I think I'm the only opposition party leader who's raised this time and again. There's been silence from some of the other opposition parties. So I think we're leading the opposition to push the government to do more. And I'm grateful for the support of so many people who care about this.
Moving on to transport, the Artario fleet has been delayed for years, costing taxpayers an estimated £5.5 million a month. What specific pressure are you putting on the government to get these trains into service?
Well, actually, we've been raising this issue for quite a period before Southwestern Railway became a government operated service. It's been going on for years, as you rightly say. These were supposed to be operating back in 2019. But a whole series of delays caused by software problems, disputes with the unions, training problems, all the different excuses that have been rolled out have meant that local commuters from in my area and across the southwestern area have not had these new trains and carriages that were promised and would make the daily commute that's much more comfortable and reliable. So we've got to put more pressure. My colleague, Paul Kohler, who's not just the Wimbledon MP next door, but he's also the Liberal Democrat transport spokesperson. He's been really pushing hard on that. He's revealed that the cost of mothballing, of not getting this fleet into service, is costing the taxpayer over £5 million every month. So we really need both Southwestern Railways and the Department for Transport and the government to get its act together far quicker.
Well, Kingston residents obviously now facing ULEZ costs, and some say that bus services are unreliable. Do you think they're being unfairly forced to rely on cars despite climate goals?
Yeah, we need to have a much better public transport. We have got some good public transport, but it should be improved. Just as we were saying with trains, we should need to do that with buses. And you know, we've been campaigning to restore and expand buses, particularly certain routes. There's always been a bit of a battle which we've been waging to make sure bus routes to Epsom Hospital, particularly from the south of the borough of Kingston, are there. And one thing we need to do is work, get TfL to work more closely with Surrey County Council, because quite a bit of the borough, particularly in the south, has a border with Surrey. And so there are bus routes that go across the border. I also think the national government needs to give local authorities like Surrey County Council powers to franchise service and simplify funding in the way that actually has happened in London. And many people believe that means that bus routes could be restored, new routes added, particularly actually in rural areas in Surrey. So there's a lot that could be done. And I'm afraid the Conservatives just didn't get on with it. And this government is dragging its feet.
Moving on to local education and employment support. You've recently visited Kingston College, Beddlesford School and Tiffin. What did you learn from those visits about the challenges your local schools face?
Well, Chloe, first of all, can I just congratulate all those students who are getting their GCSE and BTEC and other exam results this morning, and those who got great A-level results just last week. I mean, it's a real tribute to local schools and colleges, teachers and parents, for, and of course, above all, the students, for these excellent results we've seen yet again in Kingston. We're still analysing some of the details, but we're really proud of those students. And my visits to local schools and colleges really confirm the excellent work that happens.
Yes, big congratulations to them. How would a future Lib Dem government better support young people in Kingston in terms of education, apprenticeships and routes into employment, would you say?
Well, I mean, I think we build on the success that we're seeing in some of our local institutions. Kingston College, for example, as you mentioned, I visited recently. I was really impressed with the way they have brought into teaching facilities for health and social care virtual reality methods. It's quite extraordinary. I put on these virtual reality glasses and you were into a hospital. You were also into people's homes and you were able to see real life circumstances that brought into vision what these students would face when they leave the classroom and go out into the real world. That type of use of technology, I think, is fantastic. And you know, when I visited Kingston University and looked at their future skills program, where they're ensuring that whatever you study at university, you also study digital and AI skills, financial competency. Skills like that, as well as whatever your main subject is, that means they'll be seeing their students graduate ready for whatever the economy and work throws at them. And that is what we would like in the Liberal Democrats to get behind. And that's why I held a debate in the House of Commons promoting what's happening at Kingston University on future skills.
Special schools like Beddlesford often feel overlooked in funding. Will you push for fairer resources for them?
Absolutely. There is a crisis in special education needs and disabled education. I speak as a father of someone who's severely disabled, my boy, John, and having worked with many parents and families and local schools on some of the challenges in SEND, this is a crisis, actually. And when I talk to MPs from across the country, they say that local authorities just don't have the money. The SEND system isn't working. It's not working for the children. It's not working for the families. So I actually wrote to the Prime Minister just before the recess, because they are talking in the government about reforming the SEND system to clear up the mess left by the Conservatives. And I set down a number of principles that the government needs to adopt to get this reform right, so we can really help these children with these challenges.
Next topic, defence and security. You visited Estonia not long ago, where NATO is currently on high alert. What lessons did you take from that trip about the UK's role in European security?
Well, I was meeting the British troops on the front line in Estonia, and going out with them and talking to their commanders and to the troops, you learn both their incredible skill and their commitment to defending NATO's borders. And you also recognize the level of the Russian threat. I mean, we've seen the barbarism of President Putin and Russian troops in Ukraine. And when you talk to our troops out there on the front line, to Estonian politicians whose country borders Russia, it really brings it home to you what is at stake. And that's why I went there to see it for myself, to speak to these people. I met the Estonian Prime Minister, who's a liberal like myself, Kristen Mikael. He explained what was being done and what the UK could do more of. And that's one of the many reasons why Liberal Democrats are arguing for more investment in our army, in our defence, and more cooperation with our NATO and European allies.
Well, with ongoing conflicts in Europe and the Middle East, how do you think the UK should balance its defence commitments abroad with domestic priorities?
This is always a challenge, but I think the first job of government is to defend the country. And there's no doubt that our army is way too small. The last government was cutting the number of troops. We've been opposing that for a number of years. And the new government, I think, is being too slow in how it rebuilds our army. And if you do this in the right way, it can boost our economy through the companies that support it, through people getting real skills in the armed forces. And I think there's another thing to remember about if you get this right. If we say to Vladimir Putin that we are going to seize the frozen Russian assets in the City of London and use them to pay for weapons for Ukraine, to pay to rebuild Ukraine, there is £27 billion there that we could use for the defence of Ukraine and Europe and make Russia pay for its outrageous illegal war.
And final topic, you've often spoken about carers, given your personal experience. What progress has been made on improving rights and support for carers?
We're waiting for the government to conclude two reviews. One, we're expecting any days now, which is how the carers allowance system works for carers. These are people who are looking after loved ones for more than 35 hours a week. It's a very low level of benefit, but it's operated very unfairly. So they haven't been able to use any other hours in the week to work to supplement the carer's allowance. And some people have been really badly affected. I championed one particular person's case in Chessington. I mean, we managed to succeed for her, but the system needs reform. When I asked the last Conservative government to look at this properly, the scandal, frankly, in carer's allowance, they refused. To be fair to the current government, they agreed to review it. And we're looking for the conclusions of that review any day now. So that's one big thing, which, to be fair to the government, they have taken forward in a way that didn't happen before. The second review they've set up, I'm afraid I'm less positive about. They're right to set it up. It's into social care, how you fund social care, how social care would operate, particularly how it would help us in the NHS because of the links between care and health. But unfortunately, they've given a 3-year timetable for that review, which is way too slow, given we have had about 25 reviews and commissions and inquiries into social care in the last 30 years. And we know what the problem is. We know what the solutions are. We just need to get on. And so that's very much work in progress to push the government to go further and faster on reforming social care and supporting family carers.
NHS services in Kingston, including NE Waits, remain severely under pressure. What concrete solutions are the Lib Dems offering to ease the strain?
I come back to care, to be honest, because when I speak to the management at Kingston Hospital or people involved in the health service more broadly, they are clear that without places in local care homes, without social care workers being able to go into people's homes to give them support, without more support for those many family carers who do the vast bulk of caring, the job of the NHS manager becomes much more difficult. People go into hospital who don't need to be in hospital or should be being cared for either in a care home or at their own home. People spend too much time in hospital and they essentially they don't want to be there, but they're taking up beds which are more expensive in the hospital than they are in the community. So I come back to the major change that would really help the NHS here in Kingston, but also across the whole country. And that is a real change in the way we do social care and support family carers.
And final question, I know we touched on transport and bus routes earlier, but obviously residents in Kingston have said they're struggling with unreliable bus routes, specifically to Epsom Hospital. What are you going to do to improve direct accessible transport links to health services?
Well, we need to push London Transport for London to focus more on this. I'm afraid sometimes Sadiq Khan's administration in City Hall does focus more on inner London and forgets the needs of people in outer London. We saw that with ULEZ, but I think we see it with other aspects of transport. And one of the challenges is that boroughs like Kingston have a border with Surrey, and some of our bus service, quite rightly, go across border, and particularly to places like Epsom Hospital, really important to many of our residents in Chessington and Hook and Malden Rushett and elsewhere. And unless we make sure those cross-boundary bus services that are from London into Surrey, unless we make sure that they are properly funded, properly coordinated, I'm afraid we won't see the improvements we absolutely need.
Do you believe that TfL and Surrey County Council are doing enough to coordinate cross-boundary bus services at the moment?
No, I don't think enough is being done. I think it's more an afterthought. I think they really need to get around the table. I mean, Surrey County Council, I've got to be frank with you, is not the most well-run council in the country. And whether it's Kingston Council, I can't speak for the GLA. I've spoken to colleagues on Kingston Council. They do quite often get frustrated by the way Surrey County Council operates. And of course, it's quite a bit bizarre because their headquarters was in Kingston for many years, but they still didn't seem to recognise the needs of residents here in the Royal Borough.